Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us on WCTCAM or restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
You didn't even let me finish iTunes.
I know. I'm so excited. The New Brunswick City Council has once again approved our bid to launch fireworks off the roof of the Heldrich Hotel, the second annual. I can now say it's annual.
Last year you said it's the first annual. I remember.
But now, retroactively, having it a second time makes the first one the first annual.
It does, but when it's the first annual, it's not the first annual yet.
That's right. All right, well, we're going to be launching fireworks at midnight off the roof of the Heldrich Hotel right in downtown New Brunswick. It's right across the street from our restaurant. But you know what? The restaurants in New Brunswick really have come together and weathered this storm by helping each other.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark and the Restaurant Guys, of course, are launching the fireworks. Our restaurants are there, but there are a lot of other restaurants in town as well. New Brunswick is a great place to be. The Heldrich Hotel is where the fireworks will be lit off the roof of. It's fireproof, don't worry. We can get your rooms there if you want to come stay in New Brunswick. We've asked the mayor. He hasn't quite agreed yet, but we're going to have somebody big. Hopefully it will be Mayor Cahill, our friend and the great mayor of the great city of New Brunswick. Count down the new year, and we'll have it coordinated with music, and the fireworks were spectacular last year.
Yeah, they were great.
Ring in the new year with the Restaurant Guys on Monument Square in New Brunswick. New Year's happens at, midnight, January 1st.
Why do you think it is that we like fireworks so much?
I'm a pyromaniac.
Well, as a population.
But let's talk about me for a moment. I'm a pyromaniac.
Oh, shocking. We're going to talk about you for a minute.
I was a kid. My dad was a fireman, and I think that has something to do with it. And I was fascinated with fire, and I used to build plastic models, and then I would burn them. And we didn't. Well, I'm serious. And then I realized that they didn't burn quite so cool as the wood models, and it got so. And I would like painstakingly make these models, and my friend Anthony Muchnigo, who I understand is now the curator of some big museum somewhere. Don't worry, the artwork is safe. We haven't done this since we were 13. We got an old 8mm camera, like super 8mm movie camera, from a garage sale, and we used to make the movies. Then we'd send it off to be developed, and then we would scratch in like laser beams, and we'd set up into the film like one at a time. It took forever, and it got to the point where you're the horrified look on your face.
I am horrified.
If only
you are
the
correct.
Audience could see. I was a dork. Okay, I don't know what I am now, but I was a dork. And I used to build these models. So we would set up like the bridge of the ship in Anthony's basement, and then we would film this movie, and we would do like the Star Trek, like everybody holds on and leans right, and then you tilt the camera left. You know, and I'm here you
I have
camera,
a question
right?
for you.
What?
Do any of these movies still exist?
I wish I knew. Like, I don't have any of them. Maybe we should look
we
up Anthony Muchnigo.
Find Anthony Muchnigo and see if he's got
I think
any
so.
Of these films.
So we would film these, and I was the model builder. I was the best model builder. And I used to build – I got to the point where I would build like an aircraft carrier, like a model of an aircraft carrier. It would take me like 3 weeks painting each part before it was assembled. And I would build the fireworks, the firecrackers, into the model, and I would explode it. So I don't know about the rest of the population, but it goes back a long way for me.
You know what I hadn't realized?
What?
I saved you. That's what I didn't realize.
So you did realize that you tolerate me, though.
When you became business partners with me, I saved you.
Yeah, you rescued me from dorkiness. What would I have been?
Pants models, lit them on fire.
Pants up around my waist. Big glasses with tape around the middle of them.
So you don't have an answer. You just
Thank
have an
you.
Answer for you Thank as to why you like fireworks.
But I'm curious about everybody else.
As
I really am.
You in general. But there is something spectacular about them. There's something that we all, that's innate, that we like to see things go boom and be pretty sparkly colors.
Because
it's fun. It's fun. I'm not going to lie. I go out there every year, and I'm like, fireworks, okay, it'll be fun. And then I'm like,
Wow.
I tell you, we do well. You know, and another interesting thing about doing them in downtown New Brunswick, this took a lot of doing the first year.
It absolutely did.
It took a very forward-looking fire department mm-hmm. and a very forward-looking police department and building department and insurance companies. But having them overhead in the middle of the downtown of the city is really striking because it's framed by the church and the tall hotel and our buildings and the theaters. And we count down the new year on the marquee, the digital marquee of the State Theater. It is a crap load of fun. You have to come.
It really is.
And you know what? You don't even have to dine in a restaurant. It's free. Just, you know, have a house party at home or stay in your hotel room and come out at 11:45. We'll play a little music and light the fireworks. Ring in 2012 with us, the restaurant guys. We would love to have you. And stop by and say hi, because Mark and I will both be there.
That's a great idea.
All right. Well, you know what? We have to go on to the rest of the meat of the show. I just wanted to share the comings and goings of New Year's. Oh, and just, you know, shameless self-promotion. We are doing a wine dinner that night. I love the name we came up with at wine dinner. The Old Acquaintance Wine Dinner, spelled A-U-L-D.
Francis spelled it A-U-L-D, much to my chagrin.
They shall not be forgot. They're all of our old friends and our favorite
winemakers.
If you sing,
this is over.
I know. It was talk radio station. I'm not allowed to sing, as a matter of fact. All right, well, we'll be back in just a moment. Stick with us. Hey, come see us on New Year's Eve. Go to stageleft.com or kathleenlombardi.com. Or you know what? You can go to NewBrunswickNewYearsEve.com and read about the fireworks. We hope to see you ringing the new year with us. New Year with us. We'll be back in just a moment on WCTCAM and RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and our guest today is Chef Eric Repair of Le Bernardin in New York City, also of West End Bistro, Ten Arts, and Blue. His television show on PBS is called Avec Eric, and his wonderful new book is also called Avec Eric.
Eric Repair, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's nice to have you back. You've actually been on once before, but this new television show is tremendous, and we're really very hypercritical of television food shows, and yours is really a breath of fresh air. It's quite different than anything else that's out on the air, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, thank you very much for your ultimate compliment. And I think we are very different, yes, than any other show. We have the luxury also to be on PBS, and therefore we can basically do whatever we want, which is nice.
Well, you know, in doing whatever you want, the show is a little esoteric. I mean, I enjoyed it a great deal, and my family that I watch it with, we thought it was tremendous. But it's not a cook-by-the-numbers show. You don't come out with a set of recipes. Is it that it's designed to be more about food?
Yeah, well, you know, avec in French means with.
Right.
And Eric is my first name, obviously.
Right.
And the idea was to be with me, and I'm taking you with me. So on the show, we always start with 3-4 minutes at Le Bernardin, where I am the chef of Le Bernardin, obviously, and I explain a little bit what's going on behind the scene and how the kitchen is organized and everything. And then we travel for inspiration, which is very much my lifestyle, going to talk to fishermen and growers and farmers and so on. Obviously, we go to beautiful locations, and we went to Italy and California and in the Caribbean and many other places. And then I come back to my own kitchen, and I cook something which is designed for the home cook from the inspiration of my trip. And that is the format of the show, and is also what we have done for the book. Every chapter has an introduction with Le Bernardin Kitchen, the traveling part, and then the recipes.
Is that really your kitchen in the show? Is that really your home kitchen?
It's very similar to my own kitchen.
Aha.
It's a Pog and Paul kitchen. And because of the cameras, you know, we shoot with 3 cameras, and we need a lot of space, and we need a lot of lighting and so on. So that kitchen is almost a reproduction of my kitchen, but it's in a loft downtown.
With space for cameras.
I'm sorry?
With a space for cameras.
Yes, because, you know, the guys need to move around very quickly, and the lighting takes a lot of space as well, and it's a big production.
Chef, one of the things that you just mentioned is the name of the show, the name of the book is Avec Eric, which means with Eric. One of the things that I've seen a thousand times in this business is a chef, a chef owner slash owner, whatever role they're playing, spend so much time mired in the minutiae of their own restaurant. They spend 6 or 7 days tucked away in their own restaurant, and that's basically all they do. And what I see is sometimes even some of the most creative chefs in the world have locked themselves into their own restaurant, into their own kitchen, and what in essence they've done is they've locked themselves in time, and they almost stop evolving. I mean, I certainly know a few chefs who I feel just locked themselves into whatever day they opened their restaurant, they stopped evolving, and they're wonderful. They're really good at what they do, but they haven't continued to grow. Do you think that travel and getting out of your own space is important?
Well, first of all, if you stay static, in our world today, it means you go behind. The world is moving very fast. Actually, us being in New York City, you know, it's a very fast-paced city with a lot of talented people from all over the planet coming here, young talent as well, and so on. So it's very competitive and in a way it's very healthy. So if you have a menu full of signature dishes, it means you're already behind.
Yeah.
And then as a chef, I think, I mean, chefs, it's a title. You're basically a manager of the kitchen. Therefore, you're a leader, and you have to build a team. And that team should be able to, at times, be autonomous and be able to send the same quality food that you would send yourself. And that's the job of the chef, to educate cooks and to create a team around him to be potentially able to sometimes go to cook for benefits and raise money for some right charity events and so on. Sometimes to go on vacation. Sometimes a chef can be sick and not be able to go to the kitchen. And also, chefs should be able to go travel and interact with other chefs, go see what's going on somewhere else, because it's the only way you evolve. If not, again, you regress, absolutely.
You know, one of the things I think is very important about how our industry has evolved. I mean, obviously, chefs in America 25 years ago did not have the social place or matter of respect that they currently have as artisans. And
in this country.
In this country, yeah. And you know, restaurants are sort of the last bastion of small business. And being in the restaurant business is now seen as an honorable profession, whereas when, you know, Mark and I started it in this country, our grandparents were sort of disappointed that we were in the restaurant business, you know. I think that's changed a great deal. And I think one of the things that has happened is with the advent of celebrity chefs, and you have quite a bit of celebrity yourself, is that people have an idea of what a chef should be. And I think, and I want to pay you a compliment, because there are a lot of honorable and honest people out there doing things that inure to the benefit of our industry. But there are also, sometimes we can get too focused on competition and drama. And I've never seen you call anyone a stupid donkey, for example. And it's funny. It makes me angry when I see that, because I do get young American cooks who come into my kitchen who are willing to put up with whatever they need to put up with, so that they too someday can call someone a stupid donkey. And you know, I think that's a disservice to our industry, and I think that the way that you present yourself and carry yourself and write about this profession that, you know, we're in and you're a leader in, there's a lot of respect there, you know. And when you talk about building a team, it's not about a military unit that starts with hazing. It's about, I don't know, respect. And you seem to personify that more than anyone else in the public eye.
Well, you, as a chef, if you're a true leader, you lead by inspiration. So that is, I'm convinced of that. Now, you give me a good opportunity to talk about a show like Gordon Ramsay's show, which Hell's Kitchen, where he's cursing, he's insulting, he's abusing the cooks. And I think this is really the wrong message. And we shouldn't encourage this kind of behavior on television because it is misleading a young generation of people who are coming to our kitchen. I have been trained in France the hard way, actually a little bit the way Gordon is treating his staff in the show. And I was miserable, and I came actually in America very happy, thinking that it was the country of tolerance, and it is the country of tolerance and equal rights and everything else. And I think in our kitchen, if you want to build a team, if you want to have some people who are loyal to you and stay a long time with you, and people who are excited to cook and happy to cook, you have to be a leader who's really is teaching them, mentoring them, nurturing them, and not someone who's making them feel like very little. You know, I agree. Television sometimes it has some good positive effects on the industry. Sometimes it has negative effects. At the end of the day, as much as our industry can be looking glamorous, it's no glamour when you enter a kitchen. It's no glamour in peeling and cutting onions. It's no glamour in filleting fish. It's no glamour in anything. So we have to make sure that the young people who come to the kitchen come for the right reason, which is great passion for cooking and good hospitality mentality.
And of course, that doesn't mean that standards don't have to be incredibly high all the time. And, you know, Francis and I don't walk in and say, oh, that's okay, don't worry about it, it's not so bad. I mean, that's not how we run our restaurants. Unless somebody really needs that. But, you know, you can still have very high standards and not be demeaning.
Absolutely. We have, actually, you know, when I do meetings with my sous chefs, which is every day, I always remind them that we have zero tolerance for mediocrity. Because it's always an explanation why the product is not right. Obviously, we know it's a reason behind it. But the client doesn't have to know why it's not perfect.
And doesn't care.
Therefore, we have zero tolerance for something that is not perfect. Now, when we have something that we don't like, we just send it back to the cook and say, look, this is not right. You have to redo it. On top of it, you're messing up the entire table. It's not fair for your friend. Please focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we are trying to teach our sous chef how to treat the staff here.
Well, I think it's a great example. And we're going to take a quick break, Chef Repair, and we'll be back to talk more about Eric's – and to talk more specifically about Eric's new book, which is just out now, Avec Eric, which you can find at Restaurant Guys Radio. But stick with us. We'll be back on the other side. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC AM and on RestaurantGuysRadio.com. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and the Restaurant Guys Radio Show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome, but it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo, for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional, and that can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. And joining us today is Eric Repair on the show again. He has a new book out called Avec Eric. This book, which is, of course, tied with the television show, you travel the world and you come back and you sort of talk about where recipes are inspired from. And you talk about some recipes are inspirations from classics that are then sort of tweaked or changed a bit, and some sort of come from your inspiration for a place. Where do recipes come from? How do you come up with How does Eric Repair come up with the dishes to put on his menu at Le Bernardin, or to put in his book at Avec Eric?
Yes. Inspiration is something very difficult to explain, creativity, actually. You cannot decide to be creative at 4 o'clock and end up at 5 o'clock. Creativity comes whenever it wants, and it's obviously something that you cultivate. For Le Bernardin, what I do is I work with my sous chefs. It's a collaborative effort in between them and myself, and my sous chefs are with me for a long, long time, so they know the style of Le Bernardin. We have a mantra that says the fish is the star of the plate, which dictate our style. Therefore, we don't overkill the subtle flavors of the fish. And then I come up with ideas. My inspiration comes from my experiences of eating outside, from touching new ingredients, from traveling, from interacting with other chefs. And then it's the same for my sous chefs. And then we work together, and it takes us sometimes a very long time to put a dish on the menu, and sometimes we just get lucky and first try it, we believe it's great and we put it on the menu, but it's the way we work.
Well, when you talk about, and I think what's really fascinating about this show, if people haven't seen it, you can find it online, actually. If you look up Avec Eric episodes, you'll go right to it. But you talk about, I mean, in the first episode where you went wild boar hunting in Italy.
Yes.
And then
we had the cinghiale in Italy. And then to come back, and you did, I believe it was a pork loin for the home, for the home cook. And you talk about how, you know, this, obviously the pork loin that you acquired domestically was not a wild boar. But you could see how there was a connection and the inspiration with how you did that dish and how you had the cinghiale in Italy.
For sure. I mean, when I did that dish, I mean, you know, the wild boar is basically a cousin of the pork.
Right.
And then I made it, since I was in the woods hunting the wild boar, I thought in the woods you find a lot of mushroom when it's in season and so on. So I decided to do a pork loin with wild mushroom, and because it was a lot of sage nearby when we shot the episode. I put some sage to infuse the pork sauce and so on. And so that's the relationship in between the experience, the creativity, and the end result in a plate. And it's the way the process works.
You know, I've read many times people refer to Le Bernardin as a temple to fish. And I see in your writings, you often write about how there's a spiritual element to food, especially to food that is made up of things that were once living, of meat and fish. What is the spiritual element to food, or how do you see the spiritual element to food?
Well, first of all, especially with animals, I mean, they are sensitive to pain. They are souls, and we kill them to eat them. Therefore, we have to have high respect, I think, for the life of the animals that have been killed. Even vegetables and fruits come from living source. I mean, a carrot, it's something. It's not just a rock. It's a living a product. Trees and fruits and so on are living. And to me, it's, When I see the ingredients, I don't know, I have a lot of respect to begin with for them, and I want to pay homage to the gift of nature that we have. And when we cook, I want to make sure that we don't take lightly the fact that we have killed a lobster, and I want the cooks to, and myself, to be careful, because you don't just play and not, you know, pay attention to what you do, and you know, it's where the spiritual aspect is to me in cooking.
I will say that every great chef I've ever known, and certainly the best chefs who've worked in my restaurant, have all, they all seem to have that in common, that respect for the ingredients, that respect from where it came, that you know, that little bit of reverence for ingredients, and like I said, where they came from and what they are. It seems to be a common thread through all the great chefs that I know, anyway.
Yeah, I think so too. When you talk to Thomas Keller, I have reference for the product and for the people who are behind it, because very often the farmers, the growers are very passionate people who are putting a lot of efforts to make the products very special. And at the end, I have really feel that the food is a gift from the whole universe, really.
You know, it's funny, when you talk to young people and even young cooks who've gone through culinary school, sometimes it's hard to communicate that it's not just that you're worried about food cost and waste of food, that you want to use the whole product, especially when you're talking about an animal. It's just something wrong about wasting food. Animals, we take animals' lives to eat. It's wrong to throw away stuff that can be used to give sustenance and then have to kill more animals than you need to somehow.
I think we have to be, you know, a little bit careful not to waste, you know, too many ingredients, especially in restaurants, because sometimes we have the tendency to use part of the animal and discard the rest and so on. And it's very new because 100 years ago, every part of the animals were cooked and dignified. When you think at, for instance, I'm referring to my original country, that in the south of west of France, where they have ducks and geese, they use every, except the beak, they use every part of the animal, including the neck that is stuffed and so on. Some cultures, and I think, for instance, the Chinese culture, use every part of the pig, including the French. I mean, they do the same and so on. So we are lucky that food is in abundance around us, but we should never forget that we have to not spoil food, but we have to be careful and use food intelligently and again, not waste ideas, of course.
And as we are running a little short on time, we're coming to the end of our segment, but I have to ask you, because Le Bernardin is one of the best fish restaurants in the world.
Thank you.
And the issues of sustainable fish sourcing are maybe that's some of the hardest food to source sustainably and responsibly, because it comes from all over the world, and we've seen some successes in trying to buy sustainably, and restaurants have gotten very involved in buying sustainable fish, but the fish supply out there is threatened. What's the status of trying to buy fish sustainably, and what advice do you have for consumers and chefs who are trying to responsibly use the fish out of our ocean?
Yes, we try to be actually a leader in that aspect. We try to be as sustainable as we can. Therefore, we don't serve certain species at Le Bernardin. But it's very confusing because, for instance, red snapper will be on the red list on many organizations. And then last year, the American government increased the quota for red snapper by 4 million pounds. So who's right, who's wrong? It's a little bit of a confusion, but I think we have to be definitely careful because the ocean is being depleted very fast. We have to also be very careful about the techniques we are using to catch the fish, because some of the techniques are destroying the beds of the ocean. Some of the techniques have too much bycatch that dies for nothing, and so on. So I encourage everyone to try to be educated on what's endangered and not, and then. My idea actually is to propose to the government to label fish that we will buy as when we buy whole fish with a tag saying this is a species that has been caught in that region by that company and it has been 2 days ago.
That would be amazing. Great.
That would be an amazing, amazing change in the way fish is.
It would be an amazing change. I think it's possible. It's probably a fight, I'm sure, but we can get something like that, and that would be really interesting because people will be educated, and also that tag could say that fish is in danger or that fish is not considered in danger. That fish is sustainable. That fish is not sustainable.
I think it's a grand idea.
There's a great Monterey Bay Aquarium has a great website to for anybody who's got any questions about, you know, what fish they should be eating and what fish they shouldn't be eating. It's really been made as straightforward as possible.
They have a little card that will tell you what you can eat and what you can't, depending on what kind of corner of the country you're in, and you can find them on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. They did a show with us years ago, but if you find them right online, they'll send you a card as a consumer for what's sustainable.
Yeah, you can just carry with you.
But it's still hard. It's still complex. It's not comprehensive. There's too much fish in the world. There are too many fish in the sea, yet there are not enough fish in the sea. Eric Rupert, thank you for coming on our show. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Always tremendous, Chef.
Thank you so much. It was a great pleasure, too.
Eric Rupert's new book is Avec Eric, A Culinary Journey with Eric Rupert, featuring over 100 simple recipes. You can find it at restaurantguysradio.com. And we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to Mark and Francis, The Restaurant Guys. He is the nicest freaking guy.
You know, but one thing you do know. You do know that he is nice to a point, okay?
Oh, no.
He has very rigorous standards in his restaurants, and it's his way or the highway in the restaurant.
But that's different than calling you a stupid donkey and grabbing you by the apron.
And that's exactly my point. It is okay to have super high standards. It is okay to say, this is not acceptable, please do it again.
And if you have to do it again too many times, then maybe you can't work here.
Right.
Go work someplace else and learn to do this better. Or, you know, look, it's about respect. He's a good example. If you're a young person thinking about getting into the industry, don't think you're going to be as good-looking as Eric Rupert. Don't think you're going to be as successful as Eric Rupert. But he's a good role model.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a good role model for a chef.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people out there for us to say, don't be like that, and we say it a lot. But here's somebody that you should try and emulate.
Yeah. No, I think that's really tremendous. Did you read the study? Well, I think I'll attribute it online, but there was a study recently that talked about the fish coming into America.
Mm-hmm.
80% of our fish or 70% of our fish is from outside coastal waters.
Right.
50 years ago, you know how much of American fish came from America? 100%. And less than 2% of imported fish is inspected by various states. Mm-hmm. Have different regimens for inspecting fish.
Mm-hmm. If anybody has paid attention out there, there are a lot of great little documentaries out there on, you know, how tilapia is produced and some of the fish that comes in from China and
but
places
here,
like that.
But here's an example of globalism. America used to only have a small amount of fish, the amount of fish we had in the United States. Then we had global free trade and global trade of fish and the ability to overnight delivery, and we have this great internationalism so we could get all this fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so the amount of fish available in America in the 1980s was unbelievable.
Right.
And then we fished 80% of the fish out of the ocean.
Yeah.
And now we're back where we were, but not because we can't get it here and the oceans are teeming with fish that's too far away or that we have to import. Because we fished out all the fish.
We haven't fished out all the fish. But
we fished down a lot of the fish.
But there are certainly certain species that we need to be really, really careful with.
It's crazy.
Just pay attention. That's all. Let's just pay attention.
And go to La Bernadette for dinner if you want to save up your pennies and go for a really special evening. We should do that.
That's a great idea.
I can't afford to do that.
Sure you can.
Well, I hope you've enjoyed this hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I know that we've certainly enjoyed being with you. My name is Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys on WCTC-AM and restaurantguysradio.com.